Did you know that the original Final Fantasy creator, Hironobu Sakaguchi, made a spiritual successor to that legendary series called Fantasian for Apple Arcade, and every level in the game is a handmade, physical miniature model? Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a 1 month free trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. This offer is for new subscribers only. $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.
Hello.
Well, thanks for welcoming us, Mitch, to the panel in front of my script.
I'm in touch with the people that are here.
I know.
We're doing, just playing music and doing what I want.
That's right. My name is Gianni. This is Mitch, who you've already met. And this is Scott. We are Pixel Sift. We do a weekly video game podcast here in WA. Today, we're going to do a live episode of our show for you, as you can probably see. If you're sitting here or if you're listening at home, you'll be able to enjoy this on YouTube and everything there.
Pretty much the only difference is the cameras are bigger.
That's right. That's the only difference. Today, we're going to be talking about three different topics, and we've got some special guests to join us on the panel a little bit later in the show. The first topic we're going to be talking about is gaming with friends. We're all here, probably with our friends, going to play some games. We're going to be talking about some of the best stories that we have from playing games with your friends. Our second topic, we will be joined by Anthony Sweet from Black Lab Games. We've got Mark Manel from Gnomic Studios and Liam Hunt from Byte Sprite Games joining us to talk about releasing their indie game, the things that they have done if they have released a game, what they did to prepare, and what they can expect once your game is out in the wild. And our final topic today is a bit of a Q&A session. We've been asking people throughout the week to give us questions about podcasting, games, anything here. If you're here in the audience, feel free to ask us questions as well, and we will answer them as best we can. You can also ask the questions to our panel as well, from that there. But before we jump into it, we will welcome Brian Fairbanks. He's our intrepid reporter who gives us the shipping news every week to come up and give us the news for this week. Brian, thanks for joining us.
I'm out.
Thank you, Gianni. And I am Brian Fairbanks, and this is the shipping news for October the 1st. University athletes have descended on Perth this week for uni games, but this year a brand new competitive category has been introduced: esports. Victoria's Monash University competed against Queensland University of Technology in a League of Legends tournament being held in the Northbridge Piazza on Thursday night. Australian University Sports CEO Don Knapp believes that esports have an important place in uni and gaming culture, saying, "The tertiary education community is embracing new technologies, such as esports, as tools to increase engagement of university students on campus. The student engagement opportunities that have resulted from the inclusion of League of Legends in our events, culminating in the League of Legends University Finals, have been embraced by our member universities and, most importantly, the broader student market. I went down to the Northbridge Piazza to check it out and spoke with some of the spectators. Here is what they had to say.
It's great, you know. It's a different view on life. Like, some people think it's not possible, but it actually is. It widens the viewing area of what people think is gaming, and you just learn a lot more what it is.
Just because it's not physical doesn't mean you can't do it. If a lot of people like a game, like something, of course fans will become it, and people that's good at it will start competing.
Monash University began the evening with difficulty, losing the first game due to QUT's incredibly focused and cohesive team gameplay, but winning the next three and ultimately the gold. Utilizing a strategy that began as conservative but quickly supporting each other in team battles, Monash nearly always triumphed over QUT when groups met on the battlefield. The QUT team were the favorites to win, and they placed highest in the qualifying games, with Monash one loss away from elimination during both the qualification and semifinal brackets. Congratulations to all those who took part, and Monash for taking away the gold and the glory. The Advertising Standard Authority confirmed to Eurogamer Thursday morning that it will be launching an official investigation into the possible misrepresentation of No Man's Sky on Steam. The investigation is still in its infancy, but the ASA will determine what users are actually receiving when they purchase the game versus what was advertised, according to Eurogamer. When the ASA has limited power to force removal of misleading advertisements, they state that often bad publicity is a more powerful tool to use against possible offenders to encourage compliance. While the release of No Man's Sky has faced heavy criticism for failing to live up to the hype of the game, IGN has reported that this hype has been created by rabid fans and journalists, and not the development team at Hello Games. Hello Games' Sean Murray has been consistently candid about possible limitations due to a small release team, and of course, many players do remain satisfied with the game. GX has just announced that it will be coming back to Australia in 2017 after hosting a wildly successful conference this past February. GX Australia is aiming to be the most inclusive convention for gamers and geeks of all types and ages, hosting topics including game development, cosplay, tabletop, and more. It's a weekend where Star Trek and Star Wars fans can set aside their differences and make friends, where you're appreciated and loved no matter what mana color your Magic the Gathering deck is, and where you're accepted for who you are even if you prefer the PS4 to the Xbox One. GX has stated that the GX started in the U.S. as a convention aiming to create safe spaces for the LGBTI community, and this is the second year it has run in Australia. Speaking of February's convention, organizer Josh Meadows particularly lauds GX's inclusivity across the board. You can find more information at gxaustralia.com or listen to our interview with Joshua Meadows from earlier this year on the first GX Australia in episode 17 of Pixel Sift.
Brian, thanks for the news.
Thank you, Johnny.
Did you know Pixel Sift is available on other platforms? You can find previous episodes on iTunes, Pocket Casts, YouTube, and on the Pixel Sift website.
Yes, Star Trek fans and Star Wars fans will never be friends.
They can be. You know,
they won't be. It just won't happen.
There's got to be some fan fiction out there that combines the two in a world where
you can email
Spock
that
and
to
Han
Johnny
Solo.
At no.
Yeah. Today we're going to be talking about games with friends. That's where you're playing multiplayer with each other, together, or it might even be when you're playing in the same room and enjoying the experience of being a game together.
Being a game, playing a game,
the game of life. Today we're going to be talking about some of the games that we played from our younger days, some of the games that we played recently, some of the fun that we've had playing games with our pals. Two of our panelists today are making local multiplayer games, which are going to be coming out a little bit later, enjoying that experience. And it's something that we've always found that seems to be common with indie game developers who are making games these days. Guys, what are some of the great games that you guys have played throughout your life?
Well, the quickest ones to come to mind are the ones I'm still doing, I guess, like your Battlefields and your whatnots, even GTA, I guess. One of the guys I play with, especially online, Sean, he's got like a bunch of friends in India that he plays with because of the time differences. Like when he wants to play, they're like the biggest community that he has. So he's got like a score of like Indian friends that he just games with.
Your gaming pals.
Yeah, gaming pals. They play like, you know, specific games with each different group.
What is it about the games that you are playing that keeps you playing them, and what hooks you in with the community that you guys play?
Oh, so for the games like that, so like with the Battlefields and the Rainbow Six and your shooters and whatever, it's I guess the fact that they're basically only online multiplayers. You don't have much choice outside of, you know, playing online with friends.
And you were also playing a lot of the recent Diablo 3 on console,
yes,
on the couch with your mates. What were some of the experiences that you had when you were playing through that?
There's a great mechanic in Diablo where it just highlights you if you're playing on the same screen. You just push a button and it like puts a big beacon on you, and I think like that just annoys the hell out of anyone not using it, and I think that really brings people together.
Mitch, you've played a lot of Destiny in your time.
Oh yeah.
Spent a lot of time raiding and playing the short missions, the Vault of Glass, all
yep.
of these sort of things like that. What is it about playing with all your friends online?
I'm fortunate enough to play games with a lot of people I know in real life. So these are people that are known from primary school, high school, and now university. And I think just giving us a new avenue to hang out and like just like some a new environment to go on adventures, I think that's pretty valuable. And I think that's something only games really offer. Also, it does kind of bridge geographical barriers. Like one of our friends went over to New Zealand for about a month, and it's like he never left. And I think that is just one of the power of video games that people often forget about.
I think like friends, or the idea of having friends online or in gaming, is something that kind of, I guess, hasn't really been taken as seriously as it can be taken now because of the advancements in internet and gaming, etc. But like, the links between having games online and friends online and friends in real life are basically the same. You know, like, say if you were to stop playing that game, you might lose those friends, but like, it's the same as if you quit a job or if you move areas, sort of thing. You know, you lose friends, you gain friends. There's no, like, the similarities are the same regardless of online or real life.
And the people that you play with often are the ones that you will continue to come back to throughout your life. Yeah, I remember
you might move to another game with them or something.
It's probably a very fond game of everyone's hearts, but the GoldenEye from on the Nintendo 64 is one of the first sort of multiplayer games that I really remember playing at great length with friends, and there's people who I played with at that point who are still playing games with me today. Though one of the best multiplayer games that I ever played was actually Final Fantasy VII. For those of you who don't know, that's a completely single player game, but the PlayStation console had a second controller port, and I spent a lot of time telling my brother, who's just sitting over there, that he was actually playing all the second characters in that
game. Which character was he?
He was any character, it didn't matter. He thought he was controlling the battles, and that was fine because that means I didn't need to hand it over. So, okay. You know, that was a really fun experience for us to.
Alright, let's call his ass out. How long did he fall for that
He was quite young at the time.
Oh, okay.
He was quite young at the time. Right. I mean, it was like 18 or 19 or something like that.
So not yesterday.
Yeah, it wasn't yesterday. It was like 2 weeks ago or something like that. But yeah, I mean, that sort of experience, where even if you're sitting on the couch with other people and enjoying the experience of playing games, is really valuable. I mean, all we need to do is have a look at the rise of things like Twitch and online streaming, where people can all share in the experience of watching one person play a game. And it's really this sort of shared experience that everyone...
brings a community aspect to single player. I think achievements also help with that, like bring a competitive aspect to single player as well. Like, you could actually keep score and like a quantifiable difference between your friends.
Yeah,
there's also some study that backs up the fact that games can help especially children curate their own kind of social areas. I think it was a study at Oxford University that said children who play video games in moderation are less aggressive, more sociable, and have fewer emotional problems and do better at school with their peers. You know, like,
why didn't someone tell my parents that?
That's exactly the study that I want to bring out.
Well, like I said, the idea of friends in gaming, and gaming in general, has changed over the years. We all know that it's kind of on the up and up.
That's right. There's many different types
where
as
we
well.
Are now.
Exactly right.
Pixel Sift. Pixel Sift. No, seriously, Pixel Sift. No, seriously.
Pixel Sift.
Well, look, I'm sure everyone's going to go and play a few games with their friends later today, but we might now welcome our friends from our select panel to the stage, and we can have a chat about releasing their indie game to the world. Two of them have released their game, and one is in the process of releasing now in the ramp up to that. I'd like to welcome Anthony Sweet from Black Lab Games to the stage.
Am I getting kicked out now?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Mark Manel from Gnomic Studios. And we might need to scooch over a bit. And Liam Hunt from Bite Sprite. Let me just bring another chat.
Are you sharing my phone?
We are.
Unfortunately, yeah.
Scooch. Thanks for joining us today on Pixel Sift.
Thanks for having us.
Our pleasure.
Now, you guys are all game developers. You've worked at different stages of the game. You have some of you have released games on console. Some of you are aiming to do so. What I might do quickly is just kind of get you guys to introduce yourselves, tell us a little bit about the games that you've worked on, and what it is that you've made. So, Liam.
All right. So, I'm Liam Hunt from Bite Sprite. I've worked on games such as Bramblelash, which is the one we're demonstrating today. It's a game where you can connect with friends with a tether, cooperate to destroy enemies, and you can also betray each other to win an individual victory. So it's a local multiplayer game. I've also worked on serious games with organisations like WA Health, the Telethon Kids Institute, and the Australian Navy.
Anthony.
Yes, I am Anthony Sweet, lead designer at Black Lab Games. We recently released the console port of our sci-fi strategy game Starhammer the Vanguard Prophecy.
What type of game is it?
Oh, right, sure, of course. Starhammer is a sci-fi tactical game. We use what we call a WeGo system, so it's not quite turn-based, it's not quite real-time. It's if you imagine if you have the player and the AI both give their commands at the same time, and then you hit the go button, and there's a simulation of the next 7 or so seconds that play out. So it's a kind of in between real time and turn based.
And Mark.
I'm Mark Manol. I'm a developer at Nomic Studios. We released Square Heroes on PlayStation 4 in March this year, and the year before on Steam.
Very first Western Australian game to be released on...
I believe so, on PlayStation 4. Yeah.
Because you guys aren't quite on there yet. Close.
No, we are. We're on PlayStation 4, yeah, but we're on second. Yeah, okay. We're on Xbox as well.
Okay, yeah. Great, cool. All right, now, you guys have all been working on games, and it's something you work for, get your facts right, Gianni, that you've been working on for a long time. How do you know when you're at the point where you're ready to release your game?
When your publisher tells you to. With Starhammer, we work with a publisher, Slytherin Games, over in the UK, and essentially we had a certain process that, and a progress we had to go through, and certain milestones that we meet, and when the game was to the extent where we were happy with the gameplay, we're happy with the visuals, put it through the beta test. Beta test goes, and because we're working with the publisher, they had their own process for the beta test instead. And once we go through that whole process and the marketing plans have been done up and we start enacting out all the marketing, essentially, like, it gets taken out of our hands a little bit there.
So is it a bit of a back and forth sort of process?
We're working with a publisher as opposed to just releasing by yourself, there's a lot of back and forth and teamwork between, like, just trying to marry up and reconcile, like, what we have planned for development, but also, like, just the sheer reality of a business of a publisher has a marketing plan that they want to get out, that have to meet certain deadlines there, and yeah, so it's just quite a lot of collaboration there.
And Mark, you've released your game earlier this year on PlayStation 4 and Steam earlier before that.
Right, so for us, we didn't have a publisher, it's kind of up to us, and that's a good question, because that's a hard line to draw on a sign. When are you ready to release? As a developer, you can kind of continue improving things forever, and you can see things wrong with it, and you always want to make it your vision in your head, and you can spend 10 years perfecting that. And so I think you have to be harsh on yourself to set up your goals beforehand and say, so we're going to meet that and we're going to release them. And try achieve that. So,
is it valuable to get feedback from other people, even though you're not going to a publisher, but from people around you to say, look, this is looking good?
Absolutely, yeah. And they've got to be brutally honest as well. So not just your friends. And that's what conventions like, because the Perth Game Fest and PAX help out there, right? So yeah, you get a good feedback.
For us, the point at which we are planning on releasing and we're approaching now is when we can give the game, game design-wise, give the game to a set of players and get them to pick it up, start the game, play through it, and finish it, and hopefully enjoy it without us interjecting at all, which we're trying to test for today. So hoping they can, you know, do everything independently.
So this is a question for you, Liam. Now, you're very close to releasing your game.
Yes.
What is the first stage for moving it from working on the game into your release sort of plan?
The first stage?
Yeah.
For us, it's sorting out the back end in terms of making sure that we're ready to deploy on places like Steam and Xbox. So making sure our storefront kind of representation is, you know, all sorted out, ready to go, and ready to distribute.
Anthony, did a lot of that sort of stuff come through working with a publisher? Was that a lot of the back-end stuff helped out, or was that still something that you guys had to work on?
Yeah, something that we found really valuable working with the publisher was they handled all the paperwork, and we didn't have to touch the paperwork unless there were specific questions, technical questions that they had to ask of us. But we found it very, very helpful that we could focus on just making the game as playable and as good as we could in that short amount of time, and the publisher was able to handle all the things like classification ratings, you know, like they handled all the paperwork and all the submissions for all that kind of thing, which can take up a lot of time.
I don't underestimate it, and the marketing, you know, the non-game development stuff, it's a huge amount of work. Don't underestimate it.
How long did it take you between for each of your release cycles that you had, Mark, because you were working by yourself, you're in a team of two, basically.
Three. We're doing it while we're developing, so you know, we're spending late nights sending emails and trying to contact marketing and use marketing companies and things like that.
And there's also
hard to quantify.
There's a certification process for releasing on the consoles as well, isn't there?
They're pretty harsh as well. They've got to meet their standards, so you get it back a few times, you've got to fix this and that, and get it back to them. Mm.
So what are some of the things that you kind of hear talked about when people are releasing games, I guess from general gamers, that are kind of a misconception about the way that games are made.
I think what Mark said is entirely true, you know, having to do the marketing and business side of it and filling out the paperwork. No one who goes into indie games development really thinks that through before they start, I think. This is a very broad statement. I certainly didn't. I mean, you think of all the glamour of showing it off and demonstrating a game and watching people have fun with it. But the actual development side is, you know, about half of what you actually do, which really sucks.
And now you guys have released games. How was the experience of actually putting it out there and having people kind of playing your game?
So from our experience, maybe just like releasing on Steam, you know, you click that button launch, you're not quite sure if it's launched yet. And it's kind of surprising the next thing you refresh the page and 100 downloads. And that's your biggest, you know, your launch is usually your biggest uptake on the game, right? And then it's like the typical graph that goes down like that. And so that's a little scary moment. You know, you're exhausted usually as well when you press that button. What was the question again?
So what's the feeling like when you've actually released it? You sort of talked a little bit about that, and you got to do that twice because you've had two big platforms.
Right. So it's exhausting. I mean, you're kind of like, whew, finally. And, you know, the best part about it is probably watching people play your game on YouTube or something like that. That is just the best, and watching them have fun and play your game.
Anthony?
Elation and terror at the same time, right? Like, on the one hand, there's something you've been working on, you're putting your heart and soul in for months or years at a time, and you finally get to go onto Twitter and say, hey, look at this thing I've been working on. That's a lot of fun. But then also, like, there's a lot of people on the internet that really don't care about you as a person, right? And they're quite happy to talk about your game in a way that probably isn't very nice.
So read the YouTube comments.
Yeah, like, and like, we've released on four platforms now. So we've got Steam, iPad, PlayStation, Xbox, and like the difference between all of those has been huge, and a lot of that has come down to just how much feedback the players are actually allowed to give based on those platforms, right? Because Steam is quite easy to leave feedback to the developers, and I've had my heart broken reading some of our reviews, right? Because, wow. Like, I mean, we've got a relatively high, well, pretty high rating actually of positives, but some of those negative reviews are just gut-wrenching to read. Whereas the more recent Xbox and PlayStation releases, like, there's no definitive way to give feedback to a developer through the store. There's no comments to leave there. So, like, we have this many stars, and our Metacritic is a certain numbers, and we're like, this is great, you know? I don't have to read someone telling me that they think my game is swear word, so...
And Liam, now, what are you going to do with your upcoming release? Are you going to be locking it down as much as possible? Are you going to be saying, we don't want to hear what you say about our game, just buy it?
No.
Just do digital homicide, just sue.
Yeah, just sue everyone who gives you a bad...
Allegedly.
No, after these stories, we're not going to release it anymore.
That's it.
I don't want that sort of criticism.
You can play it today at Perth Games Festival, but that's it. Shuttering the shop, going to get a suit and tie and a job. Anthony... Liam, Mark, thank you very much for joining us today and talking about releasing your game. Now, if you're around today, go and play some of Liam's game over in the Perth Town Hall. You can jump on almost every platform you could choose for to play Black Lab Games, Starhammer, The Vanguard Prophecy, and Mark's game on Steam and on PlayStation 4.
That's right.
Thank you very much. We'll get a hand.
Pixel Sieve.
It's not Pixel Sieve. It's Pixel Sift.
Pixel Sieve!
Now, we're doing a bit of a Q&A session, so if you've got any questions, feel free to jump in. All topics we can kind of talk about are to do with gaming, to do with podcasting, creating media based on games, what you had to do to do all that sort of thing. We have had some questions that were sent in throughout the week by listeners. The first one comes from... it comes from Michael DiPiazzi, who was joining us on the show for episode 49. He's a local developer based here in Perth. You can play his game over at the Town Hall. And he asked us, what do you think is one of the most valuable things that you can do as a game developer to make your game as easy to stream and play for people who do Let's Plays and Twitch streaming? To kind of open up with that one, I think the first thing that I would say is there is... something that we always need from people every week whenever we're doing stuff is we need as much information as possible that we can get. So having a nice quality logo on your website that we can download, having a press kit. Rami Ismail is a developer. You can download like a package that you can put on your website called Press Kit, and you can put up all the documentation on there, blurbs about the game, who does what, contact details, media, video, all of that sort of stuff. The more that you can put up there, the easier it's going to be.
It definitely makes content creators' jobs a lot easier when there's an actual press kit with everything on it, like everything about your company, and just like in a nutshell. Like whenever that's happening and we've gone to find that, it's like, yeah.
That's a dream.
That's nice.
Yeah. It's a pretty standard format as well, yeah. So it's very easy to read.
It completely eliminates issues with, you know, misrepresentation of your product and business as well.
So that's kind of the key thing. Also thinking about the way that your game is actually designed. If you're having a lot of user interface elements all over the place, a big thing for people who may not know about Twitch is that quite often streamers will want to have a video of them actually playing the game so you can see their face on an overlay of the screen as well. So having a space where that sort of thing could fit in without overlapping over the top of the way your game is. Because you don't want to kind of block out too much, but you do need to kind of leave a bit of space. It's a real estate game, really, though, so you kind of need to decide what's the best way to do it.
That being said, not at the expense of your own gameplay, I don't think.
Yeah, exactly. I think gameplay is obviously something to do first, but it is a consideration that maybe someone might drop their face over the top of an important design element. So... one of the other questions we got was from Elliot Ustini, and he asked about cross-console gaming. He says, is it something that is a practice that's currently occurring? And if not, do you believe it will in the near future? We have talked a little bit about this in our show in previous episodes. There is a bit of a talk to do this. Vaughan, our videographer, is a big fan of the game Rocket League, and they were one of the first ones to announce that they were going to be rolling out cross-platform multiplayer between Xbox and PlayStation 4. They've always had sort of PlayStation 4 and PC multiplayer for a long time. I think it's a matter of time. I don't really know what's going to happen. It's sort of the people who are in the back foot position have to try and have the sweeteners in order to get people to jump onto their consoles. So at the moment, it's Xbox that's talking a lot about cross-platform multiplayer because they are not in the same position as PlayStation, because obviously Sony wants them to buy a PlayStation rather than play with their mates on an Xbox. We have seen some workarounds with this as well. Minecraft, which was purchased by Microsoft, just announced that their Realms feature, which is like an online server, will have multiplayer elements through that. So basically everyone just joins in, and it doesn't matter what platform you're playing on, you can all join in that way. So that's kind of like a shared server sort of situation. I think
it is sad that that is always the thing that comes up with the person on the back foot, like you mentioned earlier, like the people that are on, like, just losing in sales, and the consoles just aren't out there, want the cross-platform compatibility, and then suddenly when the roles are reversed, they're not about it and the other person is. It just seems like we're going through that over and over again. I think mainly the communication between the computer and consoles will be what comes first, and then it will have to follow.
Maybe one day we'll see one system that overlaps over everyone and it doesn't matter.
And then the fairies will come down and bring chocolates and all. Yeah. Boys and girls. Yeah.
We can dream.
Yeah.
It's something we're going to see a bit further in the track. Now, Scott, you have some questions as well.
I've got some.
And stick up your hand if you've got any questions about doing anything.
Absolutely. So I've got a few here. I'll just go through a couple. These are from David Olive, who is a friend and avid listener. He asks, in recent years, curation has become a significant focus for the music industry, with services like Spotify and Apple Music attempting to provide a personalized service for music fans. With the rapidly expanding game scene, it could be argued that a similar service could provide value in the gaming space. While Steam has attempted to provide a basic service around curation, it hasn't been a major focus. Do you anticipate there being value in curation? Is word of mouth and YouTube enough?
I would say that the YouTube, so YouTubers and streamers and stuff, is a form of curation, that people will get a lot of benefit and sales if someone like PewDiePie plays their game. It's kind of the dream that I always hear from other people that they want.
Why do you keep mentioning channels that are more popular than us?
If we play their game, obviously it's a huge, huge boost to their thing. But, you know, these big high-profile streamers who have got millions and millions of subscribers, it does have a big factor to it. Steam has tried this a little bit. There is sort of curated lists that people can create and attach their names to that. There are a lot of games out there, and I think this is one of the criticisms of Steam at the moment, is that it is very difficult once you have released your game to kind of keep in the eyes of people, that, you know, you get that kind of one shot at the public and also the press when it originally comes out. But after that, you know, if someone is a diehard simulation game and they love spaceships, unless they are looking for what is the best spaceship simulation game, they may not come across Starhammer. Or, you know, if they want to play a local multiplayer game, they may not come across Bramble Ash, or they might not come across Square Heroes. So I think there needs to be some way that this kind of happens through that. There needs to be a provision on it on the stores. So
because of the nature of information about games being so readily available, and you can just find out pretty much anything you want about any video game, the concept of the high profile curator really doesn't exist, because everybody can pretty much find exactly what they're looking for. They don't need anybody to tell them that. So I guess the idea of the high profile.
Yeah, I'd somewhat agree with that. I don't know. I think we're running out of time for me to really challenge you on that too much. I'll jump to the last.
Later.
Yeah. We'll take it to the streets. See you outside in the car park.
So David did have one more question. With some of the members of Pixel Sift also working within the music scene, what are their takes on the music game genre? Does DJ Hero piss them off? What do they think of the soon to be released Res Infinite? I mean, DJ Hero doesn't really piss me off. No more than, like, you know, the whole DJ culture not getting taken seriously. And as far as Res Infinite, super excited for it. If anyone's ever played Res or, like, any similar games like that, I think that's kind of really groundbreaking as far as, I guess, bringing music into a gaming realm. Thoughts?
Yeah, I don't know. Does a game dev simulator annoy the game devs in the room? I think there are different things. There was a bit of shake of head for those listening on the podcast. No, I think they're different things. You know, they are a game that is based on music, but it's not music. Someone who plays DJ Hero is not going to go out and make a huge, you know, mixtape that's going to be amazing or get on SoundCloud or something like that.
For me, there's no real difference between, like, you know, DJ Hero or DDR. It's all like, you know, timing tap type thing.
Hey, what's that game that makes a track out of music files?
Audio Surf.
Is that Audio Surf?
Yeah, there's quite
a few. That's the coolest music game I've ever seen.
I think that's really interesting. So, we've kind of come to the end of our talk today. So we have had some other questions. Sorry if we didn't get around to getting all your questions. We'll be around for a while, so if you have any questions, feel free to come and grab us and we will have a chat. Thank you for joining us today. This is episode 50 of Pixel Sift. It's a milestone for us. We do this every week. Thanks for joining us. We will see you again in a week's time, or we will see you over at the Perth Town Hall for Perth Games Festival. Thanks for joining us.
Like and subscribe.
If you're in the market for a super addictive puzzle game, you have to check out Mini Motorways on Apple Arcade. It's a city planning strategy puzzler with an incredibly satisfying gameplay loop. Enjoy unlimited access to over 200 incredibly fun games with no ads and no in-app purchases. From puzzle and adventure games to sports, racing, and multiplayer action games, everyone can count on finding something to love. Head to sifter.com.au/arcade to start your free trial of Apple Arcade today. That's sifter.com.au/arcade for a free 1 month trial of Apple Arcade, and you'll be supporting independent video games journalism. New subscribers only, $9.99 a month after free trial. Plan automatically renews after trial until cancelled.